number 888-938-4643.
This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back, second half, about 10 minutes in, and Mike, Bo Yates is going to join us here in a second, and we'll look forward to celebrating one of the nice scores on the day on Saturday. And as it happens, Bo reminded me in the winner's circle, Bo Yates joins us up in Ocala, back getting the babies ready. I was just about to say that you reminded me that you won this last year with Darth Vader, the important three-year-old filly race, and you've won it back-to-back. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Bo, this filly, and I know people are going to say, some of the same things that Danny Gargan, I'm sure, was dealing with the scratches for the Fountain of Youth. People are going to say, well, just FYI scratched. I don't think it mattered that just FYI scratched. This filly was poised to compete with whoever was going to show up.
I would agree with that.
Talk about getting her to this point and what the thoughts were. You came out of the forward gal and you ran into R. Harper Rose there in the stakes debut. I mean, give us a feel for the way she's come together.
Well, early on she showed quite a bit of talent early on, so I was able to identify that early. And then she had shin bucks in her first race. Her shins were bugging her after the race. So we took her time with her, let her come along, and she's just steadily kind of progressed. And then she's gotten into a cycle now that she's running. And, she's just a filly that's doing well. She's been progressing, from week to week really well.
She broke the maiden after you gave her that time after the debut in July. She came back in November. She romps, actually, and follows it right up with a allowance win. Then you make the logical transition into stakes company, and she just got corralled late by R. Harper Rose, who's quite nice. You prepared for this, and stretching out to a mile, she's by St. Patrick's Day, the American Pharoah Brother, out of a Factum mare. It's a Stonehenge homebred. Feels like the extra distance was an advantage for her Saturday.
I think it was, and against when she ran against R. Harper Rose, she didn't break real well. She was kind of rooting her head right before the start, and the starter had to kind of shuffle her around, and she kind of hopped out. And having the inside post at that point, Tyler had to kind of rush her off her feet just a touch to get her engaged. And I thought given the not so stellar start in that race, I really thought she dug in and held on well. She was actually gaining back on R. Harper Rose the last 50 yards of the race, I felt. So I was pretty confident stretching out to the mile with her. We came back between races, and I had breezed her with her and Frankie's Empire and Company, just kind of a maintenance breeze, and she just did everything right moving forward.
Well, and when you say that she came to you and you had a good feel for her, I mean, this is the half sister to Cajun's Magic, who you trained, right? I mean, that's
yeah.
The right and is a nice horse in his own right.
Yes, he is.
I'm just seeing he's made 300,000, three wins, 4 seconds in 15 career starts. One thing that was really notable, you know, obviously the first quarter goes up in 24-2. They sped up a little bit in that second quarter, 47-2. But that stretch, Bo, when the jock and horse are working in tandem, to my eye, Fiona's Magic, she took care of Into Champagne to her outside, and then Tyler was taking care of Leslie's Rose by not letting her up the rail on the inside. It was, I mean, it was about as interesting a stretch drive as anybody's going to see. When a horse is being confronted on two sides and they answer both challenges, that's a hell of a distinction.
Absolutely. I thought she showed a lot of tenacity there. I was, you know, turning for home, I was pretty confident she had more in the tank, but when they're coming at them from both sides, it makes you hold your breath.
Well,
and she answered the challenge.
Well, and, you know, Tyler, who, of course, had that spill yesterday in the nightcap that was plenty scary, he was able to walk off, but he was all smiles coming out of this. And, you know, for you, I mean, to win a race like this 2 years in a row is pretty wild.
Yeah, well, I'm still pinching myself.
I love it.
It's quite a thrill, I'll tell you.
Hey, you were asked by Dave Grenning and others about stretching out further with her, two turns potentially. Well, you know, what's the thought here? I mean, do you think she's an Oaks filly?
Well, we want to go to the Kentucky Oaks.
All right.
We just have to make sure she wants to go. So it's still a little premature to make that definite decision, but we'll just move forward. I mean, we're 2 days since the race, and right now we'll get her back to the track and see how she's doing. She appears to be have come out of the race in really good shape. So we'll know more moving forward. I think recency is, once they're running and they're in a cycle, some of these horses, I feel get spaced out too much between races, and due to all of the sheep factors that come into play and the 6 week thing, if they're running consistent and they're kind of on a schedule, I feel like these horses move forward. And if they run a little more often than what the sheep say they ought to, you don't have to quite train quite as hard. I think that's beneficial for a lot of horses.
Well, and you know, some people like to make the case that, you know, sheep methodology is partly responsible for horses not running as often, you know, and you know, the essentially, you know, being aware, you know, to give them time, you know, enough time to recover from, you know, from forward moves, from big efforts that have proven, you know, that basically have proven out as a source of a horse then reacting to a big effort. So I'm a big Thoroughgraph user, and you know, I understand why people criticize, you know, Ragazin and Thoroughgraph to some extent as contributing to that. But Bo, I mean, is it the horses of today, or is it just something that, you know, that has been sort of figured out just by looking at performance figures?
I don't know. I think we are in a world of followers. You see one person do it and it works, so you're going to follow suit and try to do that. I think the sheets and everything are a really good tool, but at the same time, they are just a part of the, they're just a part of the tool. You know, they're not the gospel.
Yeah.
So it really depends on your horse, how your horse will do it.
Exactly.
And if you run back a little sooner, you may not train quite as hard. It's just really boils down to horsemanship, you know, paying attention to your horse and seeing what your horse wants to do.
Yeah, 100%.
So I think we get too caught up in all of the science of it and forget about the horsemanship part of it way too often.
Well, speaking of the horsemanship. Well, no, it's 100%. I mean, that's one of the discussions that we're having on a widespread basis right now with, frankly, with the, you know, the incursion of HISA and you know, this idea that that somehow administratively there can be, you know, there can be a way to legislate safety through sets of rules, when in fact, you know, the only thing that is going to be the deciding is the horsemanship, and letting the horseman who knows the horse best make the decisions.
Correct. I mean, it really boils down to horsemanship at the end of the day. And I think that HISA plays a big role. I'm not against there being extra checklists, you know, more eyes on the horses. I think all of that is a one thing. But at the end of the day, it can't dictate the process of horsemanship. That's what concerns me the most. They're trying to dictate something that they really, the horsemanship thing is an art, and it's learned over a lot of time and through trials and tribulations and making your own mistakes. And now we're going to have a set of rules that dictates everything. It's just, it's worrisome.
That's a polite way to put it. Bo Yates with us, and we have to get a couple of minutes in to talk about the late Gil Campbell and Stonehedge.
Well, Stonehedge Farm, just wonderful people, the whole operation. When I was in my 20s, I galloped toward Larry King, the farm manager. He was been with Stonehedge since the beginning, and you know, they're like family, they're great people to train for. They let you do what you know how to do, and you know, they don't interfere with you, and they make it easy. They really do, and it's quite enjoyable. So.
With Gil's passing, is Mrs. Campbell and I know there's children or grandchildren that are involved?
Just Miss Campbell.
Okay.
You know, she's continuing on with the farm, and she loves the sport. She loves the Florida breeding industry, and she's all in. She's going to continue right on with it. She has a passion for it and invested a lot of time and a lot of money in the industry. And, it was really a thrill to win that kind of a race for her, for sure.
Well, and we should bring this up probably Wednesday with Sid Fando, but you know, I made reference to St. Patrick's Day. This is a big win for him, you know, who's still trying to find his way as a sire, American Pharoah's brother.
Absolutely, it was. It was a nice feather in his cap, for sure.
How many more are you handling St. Patrick's Days?
Well, I only have two this year. I had Another St. Patrick's Day that broke his maiden in his third start, actually Friday. His name's Celtic Pride. He certainly looks like he has a future as well.
Glad you told me this today and not on Saturday, because I met a guy from Boston. This must have been on Friday. Maybe it was Saturday, because after I did the it was Saturday. It was after I had done television. And Bo, he cashed on Celtic Pride. He's from Boston.
Is that right?
Oh my God! And he was going crazy. Wait till the windows open so he could cash the ticket, because he had bet Celtic Pride and then left. So it was some character, this guy.
Right.
Let me tell you, this is a guy that probably cashed tickets at Narragansett and Lincoln Downs in Providence and on the shore and up at Rockingham and Suffolk and everywhere. Probably at the. I want to ask you too. I mean, give everybody your background. You mentioned riding. As a younger horseman, but what's your backstory and origin in the game?
So I grew up in the business. I'm a third generation. My grandfather, late Roy Yates, moved down to Florida from Kentucky when my father was a youngster, and he worked for the likes of the O'Farrells at Ocala Stud. He worked for Tartan Farm. He managed many farms. He actually took care of Needles, the first thoroughbred, when he was a baby. My grandfather took care of him. My father galloped at Ocala Stud when they were kids, when he was a teenager and young man, and worked for my grandfather and the O'Farrells. And a lot of those guys that my father grew up with went on to be either major farm managers in the Florida bred deal, or went out on their own and bought their own little farms and started their own deal. And so my father started Brook Farm, and this is where I grew up. And so I started, with the bug wanted to be a jockey. So obviously when I was about 12 years old is when he first started teaching me to gallop horses. And so I learned how to gallop horses at a young age and galloped horses for years. I wanted to grow out of that job. I wanted to be a trainer. So I started eating too much. Anyways, that's where it is. And now my wife and I, we actually purchased the farm that I grew up on. It's Shady Brook Farm. We still live here. I've raised my three children, or my youngest, McKenna, is a senior in high school. And I have three children, Michaela, Michael, and McKenna. And she's going to turn 18 soon and off to college.
Where she's going to play volleyball for somebody, from what I understand.
Yeah, she's going to play volleyball at Mississippi State.
How about that?
Yeah.
She's supposed to be one of the best in Florida.
Yes, sir. She's pretty good. I must say so myself.
I think you're underselling from what I understand.
A lot of fun to watch.
Well,
a lot of fun.
I love it. Michaela, there's certain people listen to the show pretty regularly, and they know I've been, talking about, your horses and I've called you one of the game's most underrated trainers. And the communications that I got from people, after the win, people like Bill Landis and Richard Kent. I mean, you're talking about some of the most respected horsemen around the game, and everybody just, I think you're one of those horsemen's horsemen, essentially.
Yeah, well, that's quite a, one of those pinch me things. It's an honor to be thought of that way, I will tell you.
I love it. Well, in addition to the Philly, let's talk about the Fountain of Youth try as well. And this race went, completely sideways. What were your thoughts, and how'd you come out of it?
My thoughts were that the horse ran a really game race. I said, at the end of the day, when the one horse unfortunately had to scratch in the post parade, I thought it kind of changed the whole pace scenario of the race.
Sure.
With him being in the one hole, I figured he would go and door knock, and I figured the pace would be a little stronger, and I think they would have separated a little more, of my horse an opportunity to maybe drop over and save a little ground. But they went 24 and change, 48 and change, and he couldn't let them be that far in front of him. And he had to give up some ground. I thought he fought on well. They kicked away from him a little bit leaving the quarter pole because he was a little wide, but he was coming. I thought he ran a very good race.
What do you do from here with him?
Not sure 100% yet, but I'm thinking that the most logical thing maybe to come back a mile and an eighth in the Florida Derby.
All right. Wow. He's
at the ship. He likes the track. He's training well. Looks like he came out of the race good. So it's seems like the most logical thing to do moving forward.
Well, and then from there, depending on how the furlongs. If it feels like it's a little bit out of his range, you already know that he's a successful 7/8 type. You can refocus for the 3-year old. The elongated 3-year-old sprint schedule.
Yes, absolutely. Of course, everybody's, Derby dreaming and Oaks dreaming right now, but the horses tell us that they're ready to go give it a try. And if they prove that the case, we're going to go try.
Yeah. Why not? Why
you
not?
You don't get those opportunities very often, so.
Well,
and win it.
Exactly. Talk about the origin, because this is a horse that Susan Crowell, who's very capable. Susan had this horse as a 2-year-old, and just by name alone, I'm Frank DeLuca. Wanted to have the horse down south for the winter.
He did. This is as he said, this is the best horse he had owned, and the horse was obviously a pretty nice horse, and he wanted to move him down here, and specifically targeted the swale. And if he excelled there, then moving forward, get to stretch him out around two turns, and see how far he'd take us.
Interesting. It's a very reasonable $20,000 OBS purchase last April.
Yeah. Yeah, Brenda Zoppo bought him, I believe, out of the McCaffin's consignment for him. And so she did well.
Well, I'd say.
Got a lot of her buck.
For sure. A horse that came in with 4 wins in the 7 starts, and he's a classic Empire out of a Dixie Union mare. Kinder and Woolsey bred this horse. And feels like an absolute bargain having now black type multiple got the listed stake win and now graded stake placement. Frankie's Empire. You also you mentioned the other maiden breaker the other day, but there was also, I'm just looking through my charts, the man up front broke the maiden as well.
Yes, he did. That's one of mine. He's a homebred. He's proven to be a pretty nice horse. Couldn't wait to get him on the grass. He's had a couple of siblings that excelled on the grass that won stakes. And the first time I had him in on the grass, that it rained and the turf course had just recently opened. And so it came off when we ran on the Tapita, and it wasn't a terrible effort, but was really hard to win on the lead on the Tapita, especially going long. And so we got him on the grass, and he's run two really good races, and he's really marching forward.
Very nice. It took him a while to break the maiden, but sometimes
it did.
Yeah, sometimes that's all right. They when the light goes on, and you know, they.
Yep, he's turning out. He's going to be a nice 3-year-old. He's a good sound horse that's really moving forward.
He's
kind of figuring out what to do. He's learning.
He's a
turned into a real racehorse.
Very nice. Just looking to what's next for Dean Delivers.
I'm thinking probably the sprint at Tampa at the end of the month.
Is that the is that the Florida the Florida day?
Florida for it. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Good opportunity, yeah. Obviously.
Yeah.
Well. Bo, this was, I was so looking forward to this, as I told you. I was just delighted and, you know, was certainly happy to cash her at 9-1, paid 20-20. And I didn't put it all back into Frankie's Empire, but I did put a little. it's all right.
One thing I didn't mention when we were talking volleyball was Michaela, who is my biggest fan. She comes to the races with me a lot. She lives in South Florida, and she was quite a volleyball player herself. And she was kind of made McKenna the little one. She was hitting balls at her since the time she could walk.
Well, and I met her. It was nice to meet her on Saturday. And
yeah.
I'm guessing your wife. The height is coming. Must be coming from your wife's side of the family.
Yeah, or a second cousin. I don't know.
Right? Because
definitely not me.
I was going to say, because she's, you know, you, I could see you as a jockey. I mean, you know, the years ago, but she was tall. I was looking up at her. I mean, she was just,
yep.
Right? 6 foot.
She really enjoys coming through. She really enjoys it.
I love it. What does she do? What does she work? She's working down here?
She does. She works for a public relations firm.
Nice.
Yes. She's been with them about 3 years. And so she's hard at it all the time.
Well, is there potential for anybody for a fourth generation, or have you steered the kids away from the racetrack?
Well, I think they've kind of steered themselves clear. It's a lot of work, and it's an everyday grind. And I think growing up watching it, I think they've kind of steered themselves clear of it. They love it. All the kids grew up riding, and they all know how to ride, and they understand what's going on, but they're going in different directions. So for now, you never know. They may make a turn and say, you know what, we're ready. What are we going to do? You never know.
Well, the third generation when it comes to Bo Yates, and I think we got a lot to look forward to going forward. And Fiona's Magic, trying to make her way to the first Friday in May, and the Gulfstream Park Oaks as the intermediate stop. Bo, thanks so much for this. We'll see you at the sale next week.
Okay, thank you very much.
I appreciate it. Bo Yates, everybody. Look forward to that. Let me... I got John. We've got to get John White. It's past the top of the hour. We'll do a quick hit with John White, and then we got Christophe and Bob Baffert in this third hour. And John may yield a little bit of the action from yesterday to Baffert's visit, considering that Baffert won three straight, but we'll get some other thoughts too. John joins us now. John, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
I thought it ended up being a very positive scenario. The Santa Anita and really Gulfstream too, kind of getting the focus yesterday. and maybe the big cap is going to go back to being on Sundays.
Yeah, there's kind of scuttlebutt about that. All the years from 1981 into the 1990s that I was covering the big cap, either for the Racing Form or then for Santa Anita in television, it was on Sundays. Of course, you go far back in California racing history, and there was no racing Sundays. Fortunately, where I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, we always had Sunday racing. But the people in Southern California often would go down to Caliente in Tijuana on Sundays because there would not be racing at Santa Anita, Hollywood Park, or Del Mar, or Fairplex, which in those days was Pomona. And they would go down and play the 5-10, and the pick six yesterday was the 5-10 at Sunita, and I did play it. And to show you how once this went into the jackpot that I had gotten away from playing the pick six, I kind of had a $222 surprise in my account this morning because I had two consolations. And that was one of the things that kept me from playing the jackpot pick six, because there was no consolation. That consolation really can keep you afloat. And so that was really nice. I missed that ninth race, and I singled. And if I had nailed that ninth race, I could have really been in for a score. I paid $7,000 as it was.
I saw that more, $7,700, I think.
But I had Subsanador on my ticket, and not only wow. that, I put 100 to win on him. I made him 5-1 on the morning line, and when I saw him up there at 22, I said, man, this is too good to pass up. It wasn't like I was going to make a huge bet on him, but at 22-1, you don't have to. And I mean, that was just gut-wrenching for me. I mean, even like at the half-mile pole, I thought, boy, you know, it looks like he might take him all the way. We get to the quarter pole, I'm thinking, boy, there's a lot still in the tank. We get to the eighth pole, and I'm thinking, gee, I think he might do it. We get to the 16th pole, and I'm thinking, oh, man, this is great, but I think it's going to get close. And here comes Frankie Dettori and Bob Baffert, and they hold me right on the money.
And Dettori, the Tory kicks out, and you think to yourself, I mean, that must have been what? Was that the 16th pole? You're thinking he can't get there. And he surged. I started the show when I mentioned, you know, the win. Rick Hammerly Friday, when we were handicapping, Rick really stressed, you know, before the North American debut, Subsanador, and there was a huge buzz around this horse. And then when the debut did not go as anticipated, or you know, didn't meet the hype, I think everybody kind of just turned the other way, essentially. So this was more of what was expected. And I suppose, you know, the case could be made, too. He is one of these Argentinians. Could make the case that, you know, the mile and a quarter suited him perfectly.
Well, not only that, but I've learned through the years, don't get down on the South American imports off their first race or even first number of races in this country. You know, when Biakola came here for Hall of Fame trainer Ron McAnally, she was not a win machine right out of the box here in this country. It took her a while. And then once she found her groove, she became Biakola. Similarly, Gentlemen, I was filling in for the Blood Horse one spring afternoon to cover the races there. And I was talking to Mandela in the walking ring, and I actually, it was the one time I met Mandela's father. He introduced me to him. He said, oh, this is my father. And I said, oh, it's a pleasure to meet you. And as Mr. Mandela started to walk off, I said, by the way, do you have any new horses from Europe or South America to look out for? And I was mainly asking for my fantasy league. And he says, no, not really. And then he turned around and took a couple of steps back to me, and he says, well, actually, I've got a horse that might be one of the best I've ever trained. And I said, well, who is that? And he said, Gentleman. So I had a huge bet on Gentleman when he made his career debut at Hollywood Park in an allowance race. He went on, he wasn't even the favorite in the race. Dramatic Gold, who was a top horse for David Hoffman's, was the favorite, and Gentleman ended up getting beat, you know, like about 10 lengths. He finished sixth, and I thought, how in the world can Richard Mandela be that wrong about a horse? He got a buyer in like the low 80s. Well, of course, in his next race, he did win, and he rattled off a whole string of triple buyers and became one of the top older horses in the country. And Richard Mandela, as usual, was absolutely right. He was one of the best horses he ever trained. But that's what I mean about these South American horses. And that was in my mind. And I, you know, what Rick Hammerly said is absolutely right. I mean, it isn't like John Sadler doesn't know what a good horse looks like. I mean, the guy trained the Great Freightline. We can start right there. So when he's high on this horse, you're more forgiving of his disappointing performance in his first start in this country. And when he went right to the front with Burials, I thought, boy, I'm going to get a run for my money here at least. And as I say, I kept having my hopes high all the way to inside the 16th pole. And I thought you made a great observation in that Dettori really rode Newgate like it was a turf race.
Yeah.
That is a really excellent observation, because he did. He saved all that ground and then got into the lane and angled out and then kicked. And that's how, you know, oftentimes you win a turf race.
Yeah, and those last few strides, I mean, you could see him just making up, making up ground as – you know, the late stages. In fact, I hadn't here. Let me, as I do this, I should also mention the figs did come back a little bit ago. And I've got them here. 90, I think a 90, I see 99. Got too many papers here, John.
I know the feeling.
Sure, I was going to say you can certainly relate. I know that I know the du jour.
He got a 99.
99 for
Newgate.
For Newgate. And here we go.
Of course, that's a 99 for Subsanador. So.
Yeah, exactly. So nice step forward. 103 for a 96 for Imagination, winning the San Felipe, and a 90 for Ruby Nell in the Buena Vista. Speaking of which, John, let me get to, we got about 5 minutes because I got to get to Christophe Clément. Your thoughts about the other 3-year-olds? What went on here? What went on in New York?
Well, Imagination, I thought he looked good. It's so disappointing that Nisos came out of that race. But, of course, it was a day for disappointments, or a weekend, I should say, for disappointments, because that poor Fountain of Youth really just was decimated by those scratches. I thought, I will say, that deterministic really impressed me. I'll be interested to see what a guy that I have tremendous respect for as a trainer, Christophe Clément. Boy, you know, he looked so good in that debut at Saratoga. What a training job to have him ready off the bench for this performance. I think that I agree with Richard Migliori. I think this is a serious 3-year-old. He's in the mix to me off of this. So that was impressive. But I will say, you know, like I say, it was disappointing to not have Nisos, but Imagination. And listen, this flattered May Moon. And they're very, very high over there at that Baffert barn on May Moon. It's one reason I made Imagination the favorite on the revised morning line, because just out of respect for the fact that he ran such a big race against May Moon, and Brad Free, the Daily Racing Form, reporting that under consideration for May Moon is a trip to the Arkansas Derby. So, I mean, you know, considering May Moon so lately raced that they're even thinking of the Arkansas Derby for him, I think flattered Imagination. And wind me up, you've been talking about him going clear back to before the Breeders' Cup, coming out of that American Pharoah. and he's kind of seemingly maybe starting to come around. You know, he kind of strikes me as a national treasure type. And in fact, Mapper told Brad that this might be the type of horse that really blossoms when we get into the summer and fall. So those are the kind of comments that when these trainers like a Baffert or a Pletcher or a Cox or a Brown or a Clement, these guys make comments like that, you really want to either make a real note or a mental note of that, because look at what National Treasure has done. And I can remember back when National Treasure was a two-year-old and Bob telling me, you know, I think this guy might actually be at his very best as he gets older. And look what's happened.
Well, Terministic, we'll talk about shortly with Christophe Clement. And we'll get Baffert to run down all the three-year-olds and more. You mentioned National Treasure coming out of the trip to Saudi Arabia. And
when you do talk to Mr. Yeah. Baffert, if you could please get nobody has reported anything about one of the top older horses in the country. Yeah. That's Arabian Knight. So I would be very curious to see what an update would be on him.
Well, and Muth, get a little Muth update too, right?
Exactly.
All right. I jotted it down, John. I'll got a lot to catch up with on Baffert. Racing today, of course, at Santa Anita. We should include that. They're pretty much giving away everything, right? All I heard from the team yesterday was drink specials and food specials and free, you know, free admission and free everything, trying to get people to come and enjoy a non-holiday Monday at Santa Anita Day. First post, 12:30 Pacific. And you got a nice first level allowance going six on the grass as the seventh. And there's also a couple of interesting spots.
I'm glad, Steve, that you mentioned that you feel that Santa Anita made the right move in what they did, because I certainly do. In other words, I think that if they had stuck to trying to run that card on Saturday, it just wasn't going to work. We got too much rain. It didn't make sense. What they did made absolute sense. It turned out to be a really nice day yesterday. We got all those grass races in. You know, Nate Newby, the general manager, vice president there at Santa Anita, made the point, and this is, I think, a point they lost too. If they had to take, like, the Kilroy Mile off the turf or the Buena Vista, and those races get switched to the dirt, there's a chance they even get downgraded. So I'm just from every kind of thing, when you knew that they've gotten so out on these forecasts, it's really been helpful. You know, my early days in HRTV and at Santa Anita and TV, like 20, 25 years ago, these forecasts weren't that good. They would predict rain, and a lot of times they'd say it's coming and it wouldn't come. And these days, they'd in the winter especially, they're pretty darn accurate in terms of what the rain is coming, how much, and when it will arrive. And my heart kind of sank early last week. I mentioned it on your show that the forecast was calling for rain Friday night into Saturday morning. Yeah. And so I think Santa Anita, I think it worked out beautifully, and I'm glad they did it.
Well, the big cap might be back on Sundays going forward. We'll see. John, I appreciate it. We'll talk next week. I'll come to you from OBS.
Sounds great, Steve. Take care.
John White, everybody. And quick hit, really. Let me get to Christophe. And it was funny because I was somewhat surprised on Saturday. one of the races, and I'm coming up the breezeway, as they call it, and there's Christophe Clement. And I said to Chris, I said, wait a minute. I said, you got two horses in the Gotham. You're gonna run 1-2 in the Gotham and Florida.
Unfortunately, we did not run 1-2. That was a problem.
Well, you did okay, though. Christophe Clement joins us, and it looks like you're on a nice path with Deterministic to get your first starter in the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, that would be the plan at the moment. He came out of the race in good order. He's going to leave in the coming hour, Pelman Park, on his way back to Florida to Payson Park, arriving tomorrow morning. And, you know, VSS, work him, and then we have to decide, do we run him back before the Derby, and where do we run him? All that kind of things. All options are possible at the moment. Just go with the flow, work the horse, and just adapt to his well-being and go from there.
Well, this was a horse that that won at First Asking going 7/8, and that is always an indicator, typically an indicator of a... explain everything that has transpired since then, Christophe.
So he trained very well in Saratoga. We were very high on him. He won well. I mean, I've always thought the best three horses we've seen maidens in Saratoga were the Spite Sun Cold of Chambon and that horse of thought, fierceness, and deterministic. We had to give him some time after his race just because you don't want to rush him. Time paid off, came back. He trained very well this winter. His workmate was a horse called Pandagate, who did well because he won the stakes, as you know, like 10 days ago in New York, called the Gander Stakes, the New York brand.
That's right.
And but both of them trained very well at Payson. It's a little bit ambitious to train here and ship them on the way to New York to run. But I could not get... for some reason, I thought it was very important to run him one turn mile. I did not want to go two turns in his second start. And I could not pass then the Gotham. So the Gotham worked out. Now, the big question is, you know, if we try to aim for the Derby, which way do we get there? We probably should go two turns. Got a few choices, i.e. Florida Derby or the Wood. Or you could train him to the race, but that would be very ambitious, I think, on paper. But the good news is we don't have to have the answer right now. I can talk to the owners, see the way he trained the next 2 weeks, and then we'll try to do whatever is best for the house.
Well, in addition, you know, to stretching to an eighth furlong, you also dealt with about as sloppy a track as you're going to see.
And absolutely. I forgot among the choices, I guess, the bluegrass would have been another choice.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely, but he adapted. I knew, you know, I had a long talk with Rosario the night before the race, and Miguel also was over there. And we knew he trained like a really, really nice horse. He's a very good horse. So that's the only instruction I gave Joel, which is basically, he was a touch slow from the gate as a two-year-old. We thought he was better from the gate than he was better. In Saratoga, first time out, he was a touch rank for like a 16 of a mile in the backstretch, which I think was just purely immaturity when he ran first time out. And I thought the Gotham worked out perfect. He worked well, he was talking, he had a great trip. You could see Joel running with a lot of confidence. And when he asked him to go, he finished very well. So it's the line. I think he went like a 93 buyer, which is strong.
Yeah.
And you know, let's enjoy and we'll bring him back here.
Outstanding. He's a Liam's Map, and he's out of a Spitestown mare, Julio's Jewel, a Hinkle Farms bred, a $625,000 Keeneland yearling. And you've got a very interesting ownership group that came together on this horse.
Absolutely. First of all, you know, we didn't train him also for Mr. Viola for a while, so it was very nice for him to stay in the house. And then you've got three different partners between Steve Denker, who was the now chairman for many years, mm-hmm. Kevin Walsh, who is a young man who is very enthusiastic about the sport of racing, and Ken Langan, who is a partner with Mr. Viola. And I'm just very lucky to train for the partnership.
Walsh is he's Vicarage Stable.
Correct.
Very nice. Well, and nice way to no. That's all. That's a nice assembly of ownership. Well, deterministic, very nice effort, and powered home under Joel Rosario. And saw some nice quotes from Joel. Talk about Capital Idea as well. This for the Reeves, and this is a classic Empire. And I thought he had a big look out there. He was also, you know, making a stakes debut, but he didn't run badly.
No, he had a terrible draw. Unfortunately, he was drawn on the outside. He was carried wide all the way, even if Trevor tried to do his best, and Trevor gave him a good ride. And they also actually finished. He did not finish well as deterministic, but he did finish. You'd love to go two turns with him next time. I mean, ideally, you'd have to go like in an A of the van and run all the race going two turns. But that would be the plan at the moment. But he's a good horse. He's a very imposing physical, he's a great physical kind of a very powerful kind of horse. But that's the same story. I kept him in New York because he's been in New York all winter, so he's very familiar with being trained at a Berman Park on the training track. But he's a good horse, so let's just bring him back and we'll go from there.
Excellent. Before we talk about, you mentioned Pandagate and some others, I do want to ask about what went on here at Gulfstream. And Tawny Port, you've really made a kind of a complete transition with him.
He's a nice horse. He's a beautiful looking horse. As you know, he was a great stakes winner as a younger horse with another trainer on dirt. And he lost his form a little bit. And I always thought that he seemed when I got him to really enjoy the grass. So I kept him on the grass. It doesn't mean we can dirt one day.
Yeah.
But he seems to be very happy on grass. He also won a very good strong buyer for him. I think he won like a 97 on grass the other day. Very willing. He almost won too good to get beat, but that happens. But I was very happy with his race, really.
Well, and you say that he did run too well to get beat. I mean, there were four horses that were emerging and craning to get to the wire, and he was the only one really that finished that was part of the. I mean, everybody else was closing from well back.
Absolutely, but he's a bit of a galloper, so you can't give him too much to do. But I mean, as you know, we didn't have to get beat a long way, so I don't like to change too much.
Nope.
Just keep him, and the idea would be to go back for the next one going long on the grass. You've got a stakes race here called the Pan American on the Florida Derby Day, or you got a race called the Elkhorn at Keenan. So that would be the plan at the moment.
The three-year-old filly race, the Here Comes the Bride, and Zara gets beat in here, Chris, as the favorite, but I'm not really sure why they pounded her, you know, down to even money. I thought this was a pretty contentious group.
That was a very good group. The filly who finished second is a top-class filly trained by Todd Pletcher. And the winner, it's a funny mistake, the winner won impressively with a very good number, a race, another one race at Gulfstream. And then she went with Sam, it was a digital Sam. And they went right back after that Sam. And she won a very good race. I don't think Ozara got beat because she went badly. I thought she went well. Just the other two fillies are also very nice.
Well, and Cassie, I talked to Cassie after the race. I mean, he thinks she's a really nice filly. She was definitely helped by the scratches because otherwise she would have had to have broken from the 11. Instead, she got to move into the 8, and Javier Castellano gave her a brilliant ride.
I agree. I will tell him the same thing whenever he writes for me in the coming week. I'll try to write mine as well as he wrote that one.
I love it. You mentioned Pandagate, and do I hear correctly that that one is going to go try the UAE Derby?
One of the options. It would be the most probable option, but still an option. That would be the plan at the moment. He's eligible for this, he's eligible for the wood, he's eligible for the stakes at Lowell at the end of the month. But I really think he stays, and the race in Dubai is a man in 3/16. So you don't get that many choices for that much money for 3 years old at the time. It's a good race to think about and to see what can to get him there.
Interesting. And of course, Pandy of Sundays ago started his 3-year-old season with the Gander win. And it is notable. He is an Arrogate. The mile and 3/16. I get it. I can understand that.
It's a good family. I mean, the family belongs to Dickley Oak Bluff Racing, is his stable name.
Oh, yeah.
And I've trained quite a few horses and family. Aquilina was a stakes filly. Audibo, that I didn't top trained him, was also a very live New York family. With Arrogate, it's fun because most of the family have been running on turf. But it's nice to have a nice dirt horse in the same family. I mean, Audible was pretty good on that, as you know.
Yeah. Well, you also have had a bunch of maiden winners. And give us a quick synopsis. The Shoe Lady, I'm a Sure Thing, Combination, Bean Pot. Over the last month, essentially, you've had half a dozen maiden winners.
You know, absolutely. They've been running well. it's a time of the year where you run your horses to see back up north in New York and compete in the year in New York. You know, I love New York racing. The problem with New York is, unfortunately, the level is pretty high. So you've got to feed that group. If you don't, probably some horses would be better off to campaign at easier track. So that's what we do at the moment. And if we think they can go to New York, great. And if we don't, then, you know, we've got, there's plenty of trainers based in the Mid-Atlantic region or easier track, and we just try to go through them to see who belongs where.
How about, let's talk about a stakes placed horse. What about Style Points? Is she running Tampa?
Yeah, probably. That's a choice at the moment. She's a very good filly. We were lucky enough to train the dam for the same ownership. We won the New York Handicap. Finished second in New York Handicap, I can't remember.
Oh, yes.
She's a filly. Do you remember one year she reared up in a gate also? She was disqualified because she reared up in the gate when they came out. But anyway, she was a good mare. And I do like Style Points very much. She's nice. I think she will stay. So the question is, do you go to the Florida Oaks next Saturday? Subject to weather, because she had pretty bad weather in South Florida this week. Or do you wait to run her longer later on in the year? Or you might be able to do both.
I did not realize that, Chris. Are they're talking lousy weather Saturday in Tampa?
No, they had lousy weather like Tuesday, Wednesday.
Okay.
And that a question mark to come back in the weekend on Saturday. So we just have to keep an eye on that.
Well, because you and Graham and Chad all watch that Tampa condition book very closely.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just one more choice in Gulfstream. They've got a very good turf course. Which is nice for us because give us another choice and just go through.
Wow.
And as you know, we all love New York, but I don't think they'll be running on the grass in New York before April the 20th this year. So if we were at races beforehand, either at Gulfstream, Tampa, or even Kentucky, then you know, we need to run some of these horses before we can participate on a New York turf program.
Chris, before we go, is there anybody that's waiting to make a seasonal debut that's coming up either now or, I mean, now Keeneland, you also got Keeneland in sight, I imagine.
Well, absolutely. I've got quite a few stake horses on the way back. Among the older horses on the grass, we've got Kertes, a new horse from France that I like. We've got a new German horse called Winning Spirit that I like. We've got, of course, a very well-known horse called Farbridge who came back to us.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to make a comeback pretty soon, and he's doing very well. So, no, it's a good group. I've got a filly called Lamiana, who's going to be a staying filly that I like. Atomic Blonde is on the way back. So, we've got a few stake horses, all of them on the way back, which is exciting. Silver Skillet will be back as well. Breath Away will be back. But all these horses have been competing at stakes level last year. So, we hopefully can do the same this year.
Soldier Rising and Messidor?
Soldier Rising will come back a bit later, but he will also come back to New York. And Messidor probably will be bred. The plan would be to run her once more in the stakes in late March at the fairgrounds, and then for her to be bred after that.
Excellent. And who am I thinking about? The sprinter.
Big Invasion is coming Saturday at Gulfstream, so you'll see him there.
Excellent.
And the other good sprinter is a filly called Rose for Debra, who most probably will come back at Keeneland in the sprint over there.
Well, you got yourself, you got a busy late winter, early spring. Chris, congratulations to everybody involved, deterministic, pressing forward on the road toward Derby and your potential first starter in the Kentucky Derby. Well done.
Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure, Christophe Clement. And you can follow Chris on, Twitter and, somewhat active. I think he, I think Charlotte does the, his daughter, I think, does that work. Got about 20 plus minutes and it should be a break, I think, at, whether it's race day at, it's a race day at Santa Anita. So, they've got to get ready. I don't know if, not sure if Bob Baffert has got starter today. Let me take a look. There he is. Bob? Hey. I'm going to guess you slept all right last night.
Yeah, it was a nice nice relax, you know, everything went well yesterday, so we just got to count our blessings.
Well, a natural hat trick. I don't know how big of a hockey fan you are, but this was something. Imagination and Wind Me Up hit the wire together in the San Felipe du Jour, who, is it safe to say, the best turf horse you've ever had?
Well, I've had some way back in, I think, 99, I had some nice fillies. I had two slots. You just got beat the Breeders' Cup, got beat ahead in the mile. And on a, you know, that one sort of got away from me. But most of the good ones that I bought, they were from Europe, you know, the European turf horses. You know, I did in South American, I won a grade one with a South American horse, went at Del Mar. But I just don't really go out looking to buy any of them because we're all about the dirt program. So, but when this horse came up, I mean, Donato Lanny, we looked at him at the, I believe it was the April sale, and we love the way he looked, the way he worked. And I've always been a Temple City fan because I remember ran against him. He was a big, good-looking horse, and so I thought he looked like a dirt horse, and that's why we bought him. But, you know, we found out right away, you know, he's not dirt. But it's fun, and you know, my wife, Jill, and Debbie Lanny, who's the wife of the Terry Lanny, who owned part of Game On Dude, and he was, you know, the CEO of MGM, and, you know, had a lot of nice horses. So it's more of a friendly, it's have fun relationship, really good to us. So, you know, one thing about these turf horses, Chad Brown told me, just, you know, you can, you know, they're 8 years old, you know, and they're easy to train. It's easier to train a turf horse, you know, it's not as demanding on them.
Well, and he's a gelding, and you know, just nothing but fun now. And grade one placed even ahead of this, and now a grade one winner. And really, Flavian rode him like he couldn't lose.
You know, he really, I got lucky. Flavian, he gets along with that horse really well, knows him well, but he's a different horse than he was last year. And so he just rides with a lot of confidence, and he just, right, you know, and he made a beautiful move there. But you can't make those moves unless you have a horse accelerating like he did and around the turn there, and he came back. He was Flavian, he was so excited. He said he's such a cool horse to ride, and he was very rare you see Flavian smile too much, you know. He's just all professional and serious guy, and just, you know, he's like, that's just the way he was really excited about that.
Well, wins a square 3-1 as well, paid $840. Let's talk about the three-year-old situation and explain to everybody. I mean, over the years, we've talked enough, and you've explained, you know, that you make the decisions with the three-year-olds, you know, kind of spur of the moment. And you entered Nisos. There's, you know, there's people who are convinced that you entered him only to scratch him. And I would love for you to explain to everybody the thought process, how it went.
Well, I wasn't really planning. After he won his last race, I was just going to wait, give him some extra time. And then the owner was going to be in town, Charlie Chu. He was in town, and he was going to be coming through here on his way back to out of states. And so the horse is doing well. I thought, well, maybe I'll enter him and we'll run him there. And it just, I got to thinking about it. You know, and he's in the, I said, he really doesn't need to run. And the rain came, and it's just one of those things where I just changed my mind about it. And so, you know, I stretch weight in advance so people would know, so they would come out here to, you know. So, but I didn't, nobody even knew he was going in the race. I mean, I kept it really quiet, and I wasn't sure myself. And I just, for some reason, you know, I always say, you know, sports teams have analytics. You know, we go by our gut feeling, and he just didn't need to run in that race, and there was nothing for him to prove. It's not like him, you know, there's no urgency to run him right now. And so these other horses are nice horses. I wish I would have entered another horse. That's where I was mad at myself. I could have had another couple horses I could have entered in there, and I didn't. And, you know, like I have Coach Prime, I have some other ones in there, but because you're trying to get races into these horse labs developed. But as it was, those two that were in there were pretty good, and it was actually a pretty exciting, thrilling race. You know,
it was, and the horse that I think probably exceeded expectation in this was Wind Me Up. I've got a kind of a thing for him, and I'd like to see him, you know, keep moving forward. And he was game in here.
He's a horse that, you know, I look back, I think he's the kind of horse that probably should have gone to Summit Park, you know, and instead of running here, but then the timing was wrong or whatever. But he actually, what happened, you know, in the first start, you think with four horses and all the bumping going on behind there. Yeah. So when the one didn't break and they took off, and then, and I thought imagination, he was going to sit off, you know, I thought he'd be like two, three lanes, but in a short field. And then when the one horse took off, then the four horse, they sort of dove for the first, the one horse was just out of control after he missed a break. And that's the only thing wrong about having the one hole going along. If your horse doesn't settle, you're in a world of trouble, you know. And he ran up their hind ends and hit imagination pretty hard. And then ran off with Frankie. So I actually thought, Wind Me Up, but it's just going to keep on cruising. But imagination, I mean, he made like a three quarter run and still battled to win. And so it was two nice horses, you know. So I was proud of them.
I imagine that one of them will stay for the Santa Anita Derby and one will go out of town, or?
I don't know. I just nominate everywhere from here on out, and, you know, they'll be nominated in Arkansas, Bluegrass. I've never been I don't think I've run a horse at Tampa. And you gotta remember, it's hard to sort of get to certain tracks without the tech set now. So it really has changed a lot of it. But the like I said, we're just developing, so be ready for those summer derbies. You know, some of them that are just, you know, find their way around. But at least we're getting races into them. And I think imagination probably might make equipment a change. Maybe take the blinkers off him. Maybe he doesn't need them. He got a little bit. I don't like the fact that he got a little rank down the backside, but he said it was caused when that horse ran into him and hit him pretty hard, you know. So I might make some adjustments there. But that's what these races are for, you know. They're important races, but you're trying to figure out their style and let them develop on their own, and that's what we're doing.
On that topic, and in having kind of a relaxed approach, not having to have a horse or horses ready for Derby, it sort of gives you kind of a little bit of a free hand, right? Is that a fair suggestion?
Yeah, I mean, it's not, there's no urgency, and you just let these horses come around, you know, the way they want. And it's just, you know, I've never really, the Derby horses brought them, so they bring you there. You don't bring them. They just bring themselves there. That's the way the Derby works. A lot of people don't realize that, but you just get there because, man, your horse just happened to come around at the right time. And, you know, the only ones I've made plans for were American Pharoah, where he had been off, and then I just planned it. You know, we're going to run Arkansas, you know, Revel, Arkansas, Derby, if he's, everything goes right, and he did it. But horses like But Justify, he was never even on the radar. I wasn't even thinking about Derby, and he just brought himself there. And some horses bring themselves there, you know. And so I remember Cavaneer. I wasn't even going to run him in the San Anita Derby, and I just changed my mind at the last minute. I ran the San Anita Derby. He wins, and he ends up at the Derby. Otherwise, I was going to go somewhere else and run him, and he would have never run the Derby. And so I just, you know, and I've learned from experience, you just don't tell you where they belong, because you if you go to the Derby, you want to go with a horse that you feel really confident that you're doing right by him, and he really fits in there, and you have a chance to win it or hit the boards and get some excitement out of it. But it's not fun if you go there with a I've been there with a long shot, and I knew I didn't, you know, it was just I didn't feel it, you know, and so it's not that exciting, you know. It's just,
yeah, no, yeah. You've brought eligible types more often than not. A couple of other 3-year olds, actually. Let's catch up, Maymoon, and I see that Muth worked about 10 days ago. What? How about a quick rundown on where everybody else is?
Yeah, Muth is just, I'm waiting. He ran really well in that 7/8. I don't know, you know, that horse, I was going to run him in Arkansas, but the work got messed up. And then I worked him here, and I tried to work him behind. He worked okay, but I worked him with Maymoon. And Maymoon is, I think he's a really good horse. He's special, but he's still... He has to learn. He's very aggressive, and I'm just working with him in the mornings, trying to, you know, a lot of these horses, they come out of 2-year-old training cells, man, they're just warp speed, you know.
Yeah.
you've got to just get their minds completely. Some horses, you know, trying to shut them down a little bit, but we're working with him. But I think he's special. I want to keep him and Nice, definitely those two separated. I would never want to run those two together, so... So I'm just not sure yet right now what I'm doing with him.
How about, you mentioned Coach Prime. He's got to have an assignment soon.
Yeah, Coach Prime. Yeah, I could see him running like in the Santa Anita Derby or something like that, you know, just keep him here. And he's still a horse that some of these horses, they're bred to go like a mile and an eighth, mile and a quarter. So they haven't really filled out to their full potential. And so I think they're more like, so I'm just taking my time with them because, you know, you've got the Preakness, you got the Belmont now that's a mile and a quarter, which I sort of like. I think that's going to be good.
Yeah.
And then you got the Travers mile and a quarter. So you've got, you know, there's a lot of options there. So if you, you know, keep your horses healthy and nice horses, you know, they're great races, and you can, you know, hopefully be competitive.
What about Pilot Commander? Nobody's talking about him.
Pilot Commander, I just backed off of him. You know, I wasn't sure about the distance on him, so we're gonna reset the clock on him. Right.
Out of a Carson City mare, Justifying. All right, I was just curious because he ran behind Muth, right? In the San Vicente.
Yeah.
There you go. All right. Turn our attention. We got about 7-8 minutes to turn our attention to a big cap that will clearly, you know, they'll be showing that highlight for a few years. It huge for a guy like Frankie Dettori, who at some point is going to retire. But he gets a Santa Anita Derby, a big cap win added to his incredible resume. And the way in which he got there was just unbelievable. Newgate, the Into Mischief colt for SF and Partners, that was pretty exciting.
We're in a paddock and we're walking out with him, and he was telling me, he said, I remember I was here when Ferdinand Nalashiba ran. You couldn't move. It was packed full of people. I think there was only 4 horses in the race or something, like whatever. But he said, and so he always, the big cap was always in his mind, like, it's my dream to win the big cap. So I said, well, here's your chance, man. You know, I made a joke of it. And so he and I just told him, you know, last race, I think he's getting better. He's getting fit. He's a big, fleshy kind of horse. He carries a lot of weight. Beautiful, beautiful horse. Big, beautiful horse. And so, just the ride was just, he's amazing that even at his age, how good he is. And a guy that's accomplished what he's accomplished on the, in Europe. And then come here and he just fits in and rides these big races like he's been here all his life. He's just, I think he put himself probably top five jockeys of all time. I mean, he's incredible talent. Horses run for him. He knows he's in the right spots. He's smart. You don't have to give him instructions, Steve. I love that. Okay. He's just, I tell him, like, this horse, if your horse is doing, he'll ask you, is he doing well? He's doing great. All right. That's all I need to tell him. You know what I mean? And they go out there, you know? And so it's just, to win it, it was exciting because it's a historical race and it's a huge race. But to win it with Frankie Dettori was like, I could tell it meant so much to him. And he was so excited. And the crowd loves him. He plays the crowd.
Yeah, he does.
He's got that personality. He should be doing commercials. I'm telling you. He's like, everybody, he just has that. He's got that. There's something about him that they love him. They flock to him. And I remember growing up, I remember a shoemaker was doing commercial with Code. Kareem Jabbar or whatever, and you know, on TV. I mean, Frankie should be making commercials, you know, and he's got that personality and he's great. I mean, the guy is just, he's proved that he's just one of the all-time greatest of all time.
No, it's actually a treat to have him on a regular basis and for a, you know, for a generation of American audiences to see him, you know, ride. It is. It's a treat. Tommy, the thoughts about Newgate. This is a big win for an Into Mischief.
Yeah, I mean, we were you know, hoping, you know, yet last year we were in a row and he had a little setbacks. So we gave him the time and brought him back. And, you know, he's just getting better and better. And that was huge. It turned from, I really liked Reincarnate a little bit. But that other horse had beat him to the, I thought he'd be in the lead, but, the saddle horse beat him to it, so he was. But he ran a big race too. But Newgate, he just came up there, and I think Frankie said he just timed it perfectly. He was really confident. He turned for home. He said he knew he was going to get him. You know, and so I didn't know he was going to get him.
You weren't convinced.
You know, I wasn't convinced he was going to get him, but he was convinced he was going to get him, you know. And so then it was just thrilling, you know, because some of those, you know, my races that I've, you know, these big races, I like it to be over at the 16th pole, we wrapped up, not worry about it. But, I mean, he made those races just thrilling. There were two thrilling races, and it was the crowd was really, you could tell they were just, you know, they were all over. They love Frankie, you know, and then so he brings that much more to the excitement, you know. So it was really exciting for me to win those races.
Well, plenty obviously to look forward to as the winter starts to wind down. I've got to ask you about two more. John White, knowing you were coming on, wanted to know about Arabian Night status.
Arabian Night is we gave him a break and he's just back jogging on the track. He just started this last week back jogging, so we're gonna. He should be ready in a couple months.
No target. Just gonna bring him along.
No, I'll just let him. He'll just let me know when he's ready. We'll just bring him along slowly and just get him going. And all the good stuff is in the summer, you know. So we're gonna, you know, bring him in waves, you know.
There you go. And I should ask about the fillies. You got a little emergent filly near the end of last year, and Kinza pointing toward Santa Anita Oaks.
Yeah, we got Kinza is she's gonna run this week in the I can't remember the name of the race, Santa Isabella maybe or something. They're all Santa something.
Yes.
But their manner she'll be running in the Beholder.
Excellent.
She's coming back great. So
well, Had to talk to you after a pretty fabulous Sunday, and things worked out very nicely putting that card out there. Good luck. You got a couple in today. You got an Asmussen style lock of the day with either of these?
Yeah, I'm not, I'm the worst handicapper in the world. They're nice, but, I have to give a lot of credit to Tom Ryan of SF. He worked so hard. He put that whole group together and has kept it together, and all these people that have, and it's hard, it's tough, but they have a lot of fun, and, I think, and everybody's trying to copy our, which is good, it's great to see your time and effort that goes in, and these grooms that work with these horses, their faces yesterday, they were so happy. To me, I got so much pleasure. They're so proud of their horses, and they were just, it was just a great day. This game's been peaks and valleys, and but we had a peak. We're going to enjoy the heck out of it.
Yeah, as you should. Bob Baffert, thank you.
All right, thank you, Steve.
There you go. Closing it out on a busy Monday. We got so much more to get to tomorrow. Bob Baffert, Chris Clement, Joe Yates, Richard Liori, Bobby DeBona, and Danny. And it is a race day, and in addition to the usual Mahoning and Parks and such, you've also got Santa Anita today. Enjoy. Good luck. Talk to you tomorrow from Gulfstream Park.